This week on The Droids, we talk about Jon Favreau and his interview in The Hollywood Reporter, getting ready for The Mandalorian, and what we can expect from the series. D23 is this weekend as well. We've got predictions and more info about what we can expect from the conference in Florida. Plus, Rian Johnson weighs in with more thoughts on how to make a great Star Wars movie. All that and more on The Droids. Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Sam, I am Mike, and the Button Boys are back. Buttoned up boys, I gotta say. Once again, another back-to-back weeks of Buttoned Up Boys pods. I don't know, maybe the Wild Boys have the name for the reason. We're not going to talk to Chris and Ryan this time around. But we've got a lot to get into, Sam. This is another quality episode that's going to stay on target.
Yeah, I think that, look, you know, it's sort of the classic tortoise and the hare, you know, those Wild Boys. They can sure have a lot of fun and move really fast, you know, bounce around topic to topic, and that's all fun and games, but where are they? Where are they week to week? You know, you and me, the buttoned up boys, we're slow, we're steady, we're the tortoises of the group, but man, we are here and we are winning the race.
Consistency. That's what matters. You're
absolutely
consistent in the pod, you get on more often, and eventually, you know, when you're consistent, you can kick off those who don't show up.
I agree, but Mike, we got to be honest. I have to say, I miss them. I miss those guys.
I know. We got to get them back, and we're actually going to have to get them back. We're stating it now, all four of us on an Outpost pod in the next week, talking about some of the biggest news, not in the Star Wars Galactic Cinema Universe, but we'll talk about the MCU and the news that Spidey is no longer going to be part of it. We'll get into all of that on an Outpost episode. We have set the gauntlet down. Chris and Ryan are committing to 4:35 a.m. on Tuesday of next week to record this Outpost, right, Sam?
4:35 a.m. Tuesday. That's when I wake up every morning to polish my buttons.
That sounds like something a button-up boy would do. Well, speaking of the Wild Boys, though, you know who would enjoy the Wild Boys and is a wild man himself? Mr. Jon Favreau.
I knew where you were going. Absolutely. And talks about somebody who gets up at 4:35 a.m. to polish his coin collection.
Well, for those of you who've been with us on the pod for quite some time, and for those of you who haven't, please follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, The Droids Podcast on Facebook, Droids Pod on Instagram and Twitter, and rate and review us on iTunes. Email us droidspod@gmail.com. One day, Chris will remember these email addresses and Twitter social handles, but not today because he's not on the pod. But we have to say, with Mr. Jon Favreau, we have talked often on this podcast about his coins that he makes for every single feature series that he works on. Our co-host and wild boy Ryan has one of the coins from Chef. The Hollywood Reporter featured an image of all of the coins that he has made since he made Iron Man 2. I'm sure a lot of people were devastated to find out that he wasn't making coins back when he made Swingers, because, you know, that's the confidence that you want to see from a director, is going to your first film and be like, I'm already making coins to hand out to everybody. I've got a long future in this industry. I'm going to make this a trend in my first feature. It didn't happen that way, but we saw all the coins and a whole lot more, because Jon Favreau broke down a lot of what we can expect from The Mandalorian and talked about some of his other work, his production company, what he's really into. It was a very interesting piece, but I think seeing all the coins in one place, you know, it makes me just think that one day the goal of this pod will be to get four coins for each of us, one for each, to follow up on Ryan's success and get Mandalorian coins, or if Favreau does future Star Wars projects.
So I have to ask, just straight away, which coin would you want of the coins we're looking at? Which one do you want most?
Wow. I mean, I think I just said it. It's the Mandalorian coin. And for those of you who haven't seen this, it's thehollywoodreporter.com. Go there, scroll halfway down, and you'll find all of the different coins. I mean, there are a lot of nice designs in there, but it's got to be the Mandalorian to me, probably because it's my favorite series and franchise property that he's worked on. And I didn't really like Iron Man 2. If it was Iron Man 1, maybe.
I'm looking at it, and it really does. It's one of the best design. I got to shout out, you know, we've seen photographs before. You know, Ryan's own chef coin is pretty dope. But I think, and this is I'm going out on a limb here. I think I'd want what looks like the Cowboys and Aliens one, because all you can see in the photo is cowboys and two crossed pistols. And I have to imagine the other side is aliens with a different icon somewhere.
I'd have to think you're right.
And that'd be so cool. You know, also, you know, it's got our boy Harrison. It's got my boy DC. You know, everybody loved it. It's one of the high watermarks of cinema.
Can you answer me, what is the coin to the right of cowboys? I don't know what that film is.
2016.
An alien with a hat on? Yeah, I guess you could just check his IMDb. I think you might be doing that yourself.
I'm gonna go there now. This is too. We can't have. Well, this is. This is terrible. I don't know. Ryan's screaming right now.
We'll come back to it and find out what the other Favreau coin is. But let's get into some of the quotes about The Mandalorian. For those of you who are looking forward to The Mandalorian, Jon Favreau is the showrunner, executive producer. He's been shepherding this along, working with a lot of different people. But I think maybe the most interesting quote that came out of this, and we'll talk about some of the other ones that he had as well, was that he said he's trying to evoke the aesthetics of not just the original trilogy, but the first film. Not just the first film, but the first act of the first film. What was it like on Tatooine? What was going on in that cantina that has fascinated me since I was a child? And I love the idea of the darker, freakier side of Star Wars, the Mad Max aspect of Star Wars. That is a quote that speaks to me. I've said on this pod before that, you know, when Star Wars is weird, it's what really connects to me. I love when Star Wars gets weird because it's what made me feel comfortable in being weird myself. I related to it, and it made me feel like I was in my own kind of world with that. And that's what I kind of wanted to hear from Favreau. And if that's the base point of this, if that's where he's setting up the Mandalorian and the direction that he's giving to his entire crew, cast, all the directors that he's working with, that's pretty... it makes me more excited than I was already for The Mandalorian, you know, despite some reservations about the way that Favreau has worked in the past.
I've got to say, what this says to me, this sentence, this statement that you just read, Mike, screams vision. Screams visionary. And I'm here for it. No, look, I think Favreau is... I think he has a little bit of the... I think he's got a little bit of Kevin Smith in him. Right, I think he's a guy who loves movies, loves talking movies, loves talking culture. And one of the things that I think makes Kevin Smith eminently like listenable and easy to listen to and enjoy is that, you know, he name drops, right? And he, you know, he knows his audience, and I think Favreau is that way too. So I think he's like being very smart with you know. It's no accident to name drop Mad Max, which is itself kind of a different reimagining of the Western in the way that Star Wars was also a reimagining of the Western. And I love the drill down. As I've, you know, said on the pod many times, not only is the original Star Wars, and I will not call it by another name, my favorite, but it's also the best Star Wars movie, and that in my mind is inarguable point.
Oof.
And I think it largely, you know, it comes down to it, you know, what other movie that there's few movies that can have such a sort of lingering slow pace for an adventure movie that are so captivating. And I think the grit and the texture and everything that you get on Tatooine in that sequence, it's a time when, you know, you get to meet Luke. It's where you meet Han. And it really has. It's like captured. It's a place that's always high on the list of like memorable locales in a series that's full of them. So
it's so interesting you talk about the grittiness, and you think about the way the J.J. Abrams and the Rian Johnson as well, just the overall production brought things back to as many real sets as they could make, trying to make it feel based in a grounded reality while also obviously still being in space and in a galaxy far, far away, with still tons and tons of special effects. But it was that response. Remember that first sizzle reel that we saw for The Force Awakens, where it began with real sets, real, you know, effects, real all.
I'll never forget it. I will never forget that. It's incredible.
But it's interesting that, you know, when you look and you read this article, it's all about Jon Favreau taking some of what he's learned by doing The Jungle Book, by The Lion King, and then pairing this with the live action shoot where they did video walls. They had virtual camera work and virtual production that then ended up being these video walls that were on set that allowed them to use them as almost in-camera effects so that the cast was reacting to cues that were coming from not a green screen but this visual wall, which we saw a little bit from Gareth Edwards when shooting Rogue One. You know, there were bits of that that almost had him working with a virtual camera, and then also when they were on some of the different ships they had jumping to hyperspace was wrapped around this projection around the cockpit of the set so that the light reaction, the way it reflected off of the characters, wasn't being done in CGI post. There's going to be a ton of CGI. We know these episodes are $10, $15 million a pop, but it's interesting that they're using some of those elements in the way that they're shooting this, and a little bit in counter to that sizzle reel and what people were talking about in the response to the prequels.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's there's like quite a lot there that you said. I think just jumping back to the technology itself, I think it's awesome, and I think it's one of those things where, in a lot of ways, to me, I don't know, you know, people could disagree, but like this is still very practical to me, you know, and it's because it's that idea of like, yes, you're using technology, you're using, you know, digital screens and you're projecting all this stuff. And I know this is all stuff we're talking before they go in and, you know, rebuild characters in the background out of CGI and everything. But the initial idea, I mean, there's so much value in the way you capture, like what you capture in camera. And so I think the idea, it harkens back to, you know, the old rear projection, you know, which looks to any kid, you know, I remember watching the like Apple Dumpling Gang in school as a kid on like movie day or something. And it's like all the rear projection, you know, looked so fake, but you have to remember it's like, well, they were doing that. Like they were using the tools they had. They were, you know, doing something that was for all intents and purposes impossible to really film. And they were filming it and they were making it a part of the movie. And so that's kind of what you're doing here. And you're giving your actors, you know, more tools to work with, things to aid their performances. I mean, one of the biggest criticisms you have of the entire sort of CG era of the late 90s, early aughts, when it was kind of maturing as its own form, was you know, how poor it reflected on actors and how awkward it made actors look when, you know, when they didn't know where to look, they didn't know what to touch, they didn't know how to interact with what they were going to be seeing later.
You know who never had a problem with that? Good old Ewan McGregor.
I was going to say there are of course exceptions, you know, the creature work that Spielberg did in to reference The Outpost, you know, and well, were there practical dinos on that set? I don't know.
I was going to Ewan McGregor with him always catching Jar Jar's eyes.
But Ewan McGregor, you know, George Lucas, you know, there were always artists who spent time and took their time with the CG as an art form. But you know, in this day and age, you know, CG performance has come a long way. But having something on set that your actors can react to is huge. And I think it's something we've talked about because I've got to get it in there. You know, it's one of the things that makes you know, Tom Cruise so compelling is whenever he's performing any of these death-defying stunts. I mean, there's the hold your breath factor of like he's actually doing it, but then there's also the element of like, as an actor, part of his philosophy is to challenge himself, and that, you know, if you're supposed to perform as somebody who's driving in a tense situation, you know, you can't truly pretend that. You don't know what it's going to be like until you're doing it. So he practices, and he's also a crazy man. Nobody should expect to do that. But, you know, it's the idea of how do you create as real an environment for your actors as possible, as opposed to going into the big green tank. And so that's exciting to me.
Sam, I demand, is it the Apple Dumpling Gang? I'm not familiar with this.
Oh, do I have this wrong?
I'm not familiar with it at all. I'm wondering, can we get an outpost on the Apple Dumpling Gang? I've never heard of this in any form. So you're probably correct.
It is right.
I don't know what this is.
You made me, I thought you were going to tell me it's like, oh, it's the Peach Barrel Gang.
I don't know what this is.
It's a movie with Don Knotts and Bill Bixby.
It's a live action movie?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a live action movie, and it's like, it's a movie where, if I recall, is it a bunch of kids or is it just adults? But it's kind of like a madcap caper, silly kids movie. And I think it's vaguely, oh man, it's not in the Old West because there's cars, I think. But anyway, there's some kind of like jailbreak or robbery or something. And it was a movie that we watched in school, I remember.
The very first Droid's live viewing of something is going to be the Apple Dumpling Gang. That's our first live pod reacting to anything, I have to say.
Rebringing
this back and focus on Mr. Favreau, a couple things are very impressive about this. Obviously, his emphasis, because I haven't gotten the sense that he has developed the tools to make all of this happen with The Jungle Book, with Lion King. He's worked with people and created a production company that can utilize these tools and innovate and develop new things. And one of the things that, while you were talking, Sam, reminded me of Wild Boy Chris saying that Star Wars is always shown that they will innovate in the next iteration. So from Star Wars to Empire Strikes Back to Return of the Jedi, moving to the prequels, it's always been about how do you push the form? How do you use new technology? This feels right in line with that, which is pretty exciting that there could be new ways to be making a film. And even if they're not the very first, they could be finding new executions, maybe perfecting it in some ways to do something new on screen that may be on the small screen now. But it feels very much in the tradition of Star Wars. And I know that Chris would weigh in if he could, and he will probably on the next podcast about that as well. But I was impressed with that. I'm impressed with the production company. I like the tone that he's trying to take with it. But the thing that really stood out to me was that he wrote 4 episodes of The Mandalorian on spec before he had any kind of deal with Disney. Obviously, he has plenty of connections. He's been in the industry for a long time. He has a great relationship with Disney. So it's not like a person, you or I, or, you know, the droids who've written, what, hundreds of spec scripts that haven't gone anywhere? We've all done that together. It's not like that. But I do appreciate that someone like him, who probably could have gotten a meeting and probably gotten maybe partially some, not a green light, but a good step forward in the possibility of making The Mandalorian without writing anything, wrote 4 episodes on his own, and then they gave him the series. And obviously this is a puff piece trying to make him look good, but if you take that at face value, I respect it.
Yeah, it sounds like either maybe somebody who is getting a little tired of animating big cats.
He did say, I think he was doing it like in between. He had like 3 hours that he had to work per day on some of those movies.
I think it's a great soundbite, and I think it is probably, technically true or factually true. I think he probably, you know, he didn't have a deal in place and he wasn't getting paid, so to do that. But I mean, you got to look at like what's going on, which is that, you know, what he's been asked to do at that company. It's like he was the first director for the MCU. He was the first Yeah, Jungle Book was the first live-action Disney translation.
I believe you're right, because I don't think the first director for that. After that.
And they said, hey, we're trying to do this new thing. We're taking Star Wars to TV. He's definitely a guy who's in the meetings, and he's definitely a guy who gets to, at this point, because every project he's been on has won, basically. I mean, largely, for Disney, those intro pieces. So it's like, he kind of gets to say, like, yeah, I want that one. But, you know, before the deal gets signed and everything, you know, he's writing in the 2 or 3 hours he has on set. But you got to remember, he's also, that's time he's getting paid for, like, by Disney. So, you know, it's kind of like, was it on spec? I do think it's cool. And I think what it shows, if anything, is that it's like what he wrote there cemented it or solidified it or was exactly what they were looking for, as opposed to, you know, he didn't miss the mark there.
Yeah.
You know,
and the way you were talking about Kevin Smith reminds me of this. Like, I could see Kevin Smith being like, oh, I wrote, and I think he did. Didn't he write his own Batman movie that never got made?
Maybe. I mean, he definitely was paid and wrote a Superman movie that was never made.
Okay. Maybe that was it. Maybe I'm thinking of a Superman movie.
But he's got some good stories. That's the one where he had to write the giant mechanical spider for the producer who went on to make Wild Wild West. For folks who aren't familiar with that story, it has been told a lot. It is very easy to find, both in audio podcast format or in written format. It is one of the all-time funniest stories, which is that the producer who was trying to get Superman off the ground and had Kevin Smith write it insisted on a giant mechanical spider as the villain in the end, which Kevin Smith didn't understand, but like wrote, and the movie didn't get made. His script didn't ever go anywhere. And he went to see Wild Wild West and it had that in the third act, and he looked and it was the same producer. and he tells it much better because it's Kevin Smith. He's a good storyteller.
We'll have to find that. I'm sure it's, as you said, you could look it up and find it on one of his podcasts or any retelling. I'm sure, as you said, he's done it many times. I'm kind of a little bit curious about, you know, what Kevin Smith, has he made a visit to the set of The Mandalorian? He's made a visit to basically every other new Star Wars production. Well, I guess it's, we didn't hear about him going to Rogue One or Solo, but he did go to the Saga films.
It's a good question. And, you know, he's obviously, he's part of the MCU officially and technically, thanks to Captain Marvel.
That's right.
So, you know, maybe he knows something. I haven't listened to his, usually I listen to, now it's been rebranded, Fat Men Beyond, his sort of geek pop culture podcast with Mark Bernardin, and I haven't listened in the last couple of weeks, so I might have missed if he's made a visit. But we should take a look. Mike, I'm a little concerned.
Oh, why is
you
that?
You haven't brought up what I think is like the golden nugget of this article.
Oh boy, I missed it.
I mean, we haven't talked about the original Doug Chang portrait of Favreau in the Mandalorian armor.
I do have in bold in my pull quotes from the article, Favreau drawn as Mandalorian.
It's Jon Favreau. It's clearly Jon Favreau's 2019 face on Jon Favreau's 1996 body in a Mandalorian suit. But I love it, and it's great, and actually, it's a cool piece of art. What a great position to be in, where you're helming a series, and you can have like the creative director of Lucasfilm, you know, mock you up an original of you in an iconic Star Wars uniform. Of course, I'd frame it and hang it. I'd love it.
You know, it doesn't surprise me that the man who makes his own coins to designate that he directed something also asked for a portrait of himself in the series.
Well, now, did he ask? I didn't catch that. Did he?
I mean,
maybe he asked for it for the THR piece.
Well, fortunately enough, I am talking to someone who has wonderful artistic skills, and I think that we might be able to get current heads of all the droids on top of Star Wars droids.
Boy, oh boy, I opened my big mouth, and now I gave myself a new project.
Look,
you
if
know what?
You
I think I can make that happen.
If you're complaining about a Doug Chang comparison for you, I don't think that's a problem. I don't think you should be. You should just take the compliment that I will compare you to Mr. Doug Chang.
His art is really cool. It does remind me of, if people are familiar with Phil Noto's work, Phil Noto does a lot of the Star Wars Marvel comics. I should check my facts here. He definitely does covers. I think he's the main artist on the main like Star Wars comic book, which there's some news about that. But Phil Noto, it's like, his line work and shading and sort of smoothness is actually very reminiscent of this Doug Chang portrait. So I'm like, it actually, having this piece in the article, I was like, oh, I see why they chose Phil Noto, whose work is awesome. That's not to say it wasn't also well-deserved, but, you know, out of thousands of amazingly talented comic artists, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, you go with the one whose work looks kind of like the creative director at Lucasfilm.
Do you think that we can get someone who can do Doug Chang knockoffs to work in Galaxy's Edge and do that as portraits for people? I think they should. Why aren't they doing that? You know, someone dressed up as an Ithorian and then doing those portraits?
Mike, we really got to. You and I are spitting marketing gold every week on this pod that the Disney execs are just getting for free.
Hey, look, when you and I are running the marketing department in 10 years' time, you know, we can look back on this and say it was the foundation.
When I'm doing a portrait of Ryan, putting his head on top of L3's body, I don't know.
Well, you heard it there first, Ryan. You get L3.
Oh no, he's gonna kill me. I don't know how I feel about that, or how he'll feel about that. I don't know, Ryan. You get who you want. You, after the episode, you text me, you get who you want. Which droid?
That means, well, I was going to say, Ryan will definitely listen to this episode. Chris, it's up for grabs.
Hey, Chris, yeah. You text me, you get it too. There's some I'll never need to draw.
Before we leave the Favreau article, the last thing that I wanted to mention is that he talks about the pressure he felt with Iron Man, and he was asked by the interviewer if he's feeling the same kind of pressure by launching Disney Plus. Disney mm-hmm. Plus is anchored by The Mandalorian to start things on November 12th. He says, this feels to me like when we made Iron Man. It didn't feel like the future of Marvel was resting on it, even though the future of Marvel was resting on it, because if we failed, they would have lost their characters that were collateral. Because as we know, at that time, the characters, I believe, could have reverted to other studios if Marvel did not actually, and I read this in there's a book about franchise filmmaking that talked about how the different characters obviously had been at different studios, but Marvel was able to bring them back if they could hit certain benchmarks, similar to what we were talking about with Spider-Man and Sony. They had to hit certain benchmarks to keep the character with Marvel. Well, if they didn't do that with Iron Man, they might have lost the rights to all of the characters. We wouldn't be in the MCU right now. So he had that pressure before. He doesn't feel like it's quite the same, because obviously Star Wars doesn't revert to some other stakeholder if they don't do this series well. But I think, and we've mentioned it before on the podcast, we really are at a significant, not turning point, but touch point in the Star Wars cinematic history. Because with Rise of Skywalker premiering this year, if it doesn't meet expectations, and if The Mandalorian doesn't draw the audience that Disney is hoping for, and again, they probably won't report their ratings like Netflix doesn't report their ratings, but internally they'll have to respond to it. If we start to see a fade on the success of Star Wars, this could be a big moment where we see potentially a change in how much either approach or how much more they end up deciding to invest in more series or more films. They're always going to make them, but we might see them have to come either back to a broader audience, have to not allow auteurs like Rian Johnson to make his own film. This could just be a very big linchpin moment in Star Wars.
It could. I think I think the only impact of the impacts you're describing, I have to take the sort of more optimistic view that it's really just for the short term, right? I think if The Mandalorian, you know, isn't a success, if it kind of blows up and doesn't work for them, I think it might really damage some of what we could have seen for the next 3 to 5 years. I think that's really, really true. But yeah. I also think that the people who are, you know, in charge of Disney, in charge of Lucasfilm, in charge of a handful of other, you know, major long-running franchises, James Bond, excuse me, that, like, I think they recognize how this stuff is cyclical and how everything has its day. Everything has its day in court, you know, and everything has its day in the sun. So, you know, it's the argument for the prequels. It's the argument for, you know, why for the last 5 years, Honor Majesty's Secret Service has been like the number one Bond film by, you know, for most Bond fans, which is kind of crazy to me growing up in the age when it was still like, that guy, he only did one, you know, like these things swing on a pendulum, you know, over time. And so I think the worst case scenario is that we lose out in the short term. But look, we're going to be fine. We got the pie. We'll talk about it all day. And Star Wars is certainly going to be fine, I think. I do like, though, look, something feeling, there's nothing wrong with something feeling like making Iron Man.
Sam, this weekend, D23 is happening, and this is in Anaheim. I believe earlier I said it was in Florida. But in Anaheim, they will be showing Disney Plus. They'll be revealing the Mandalorian trailer. It's happening on Friday. So those of you who are listening to this, you might have already seen it. You know more about the Mandalorian than we do. And, of course, there'll be tons of celebrities. They're doing Disney Legends.
You don't know
They're
more than we do.
Robert Downey Jr. Yes, we know all. We joked about being part of Disney marketing. We are part of Disney marketing. We just didn't want to tell you. We're Disney secret viral marketing. We're pretty good at it. We're so good that Sam went silent. He's like a submarine in his viral deep marketing.
I did. I think we're going to have to just acknowledge to all that despite our seamless and wonderful editing, I'm having a few technical issues. So I'm in and out of hearing you. So I actually missed your joke.
Sam, I think why don't we call it a day on this one, and we'll just wrap it up, and I can wrap it up with a little bit if you can hear me.
I've got you, but yeah, Mike, why don't you just, if you want to tell folks, you know, we're looking forward, maybe, you know, any big predictions from D23. Again, we're going to hold off on the MCU stuff, but, I would say, if you want to share just, my only closing thing was to share, Rian Johnson's, words. So maybe if you want to tackle that one, sorry folks, I hate to leave you here, kid, but, I don't remember what he says there. It's my favorite movie of all time. love you guys. Bye.
Well, we thank Sam and sad that he had some issues technically, but what a solid episode that we got in anyway. But I will have to look up the Rian Johnson quote from Sam. I don't have it readily available. So, you know, putting me on the spot as he exits is a classic droid move. I feel like there's got to be some sort of term for that that we'll come up with the next time we come around, but I'll find
guess
this.
Who's back.
Whoa, there he is. Coming to save me, as I didn't know Rian Johnson
I never
quote.
Left.
Maybe we've got Sam, but let's see if we can work in this quote here before we lose you, Sam.
Here's what Rian had to say, of course.
Oh, sadly, there he goes. I'll have to step in here and just
okay.
Take.
I'm here. Hopefully you guys are still hearing me. Rian made sure to say that I think that the instant you start thinking in terms of how do you not step outside of the bounds of what the original movies did, you're not thinking the way the people who made the original movies did. They were, with every movie, they were pushing it forward. With every movie, they were stepping outside those bounds and pushing the characters into new, emotionally honest, but surprising places. That's why those movies are great. That's why they're alive. And if they had been then looking at something that came before and saying, oh, we better not do this or that because it's outside of this or that, it would have been different. And I mean, I think this encapsulates, once again, just another quote that encapsulates what we loved so much about Rian Johnson's The Last Jedi. It felt like the true sort of successor to what George Lucas had been doing. It was experimental, it was inventive, it was surprising, it pushed the Force. It Force pushed into new territory. So I thought that was a great quote. I don't know, hopefully you got that.
I think you Force pushed the internet to work. You made it work there, Sam. I heard all of it. You got the entire quote in. The internet respected Rian Johnson, wanted Rian Johnson's words to be heard. And it is very, as usual, melts my heart or enlivens my soul when I hear from Rian Johnson talking about Star Wars and how he likes to make these films. Real quickly, Sam, while we still have you, D23, biggest prediction, what do you got?
Biggest prediction, well, I mean, it's the one everybody's talking about. I want to see how long Ewan's beard has got.
Whoa, so we know you're saying it's going to be official. We've talked about it on the pod. It has not been in any way mentioned by Disney or Star Wars or Lucasfilm, but you're saying we're going to get Ewan and he's showing up on the stage.
I think he's going to be there. I think he's going to be on stage, and I think it's going to be maybe something as small as the, in terms of content, as the Mahershala Ali moment, but as big as the Mahershala Ali moment from Comic-Con.
Well, that is going to bring it to the end of this edition of the pod. We appreciate you joining us for this show. Buttoned up boys, quite buttoned up. The internet, though, it gets in the way of a wild boy or the buttoned up boys. You can't trust that Riley old internet. That'll do it for this week's edition.
The internet is the wild boy.
Yeah, I think that might have been Chris and Ryan finding some way to force push the internet into being the wild boy. That'll do it for this edition of the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. What they wrote.